Chapter 8. Eyes upon her in a kind of expectant, breathless attention, and seemingly forget the existence of the world and his own existence too. In the course of the farewell banquet, at which she was present reclining on her couch, he burst forth into complaints of the treatment he had received. After General San Martin's departure, he had been beset by spies, slandered by civil officials, his services ignored, his liberty and even his life threatened by the Chilean government. He got up from the table, thundered execrations pacing the room wildly, then sat down on the couch at his wife's feet, his breast heaving, his eyes fixed on the floor. She reclined on her back, her head on the cushions, her eyes nearly closed. "And now I am an honored Spanish officer," he added in a calm voice. The captain of the English frigate then took the opportunity to inform him gently that Lima had fallen, and that by the terms of a convention the Spaniards were withdrawing from the whole continent. Gasparuz raised his head, and without hesitation, speaking with suppressed vehemence, declared that if not a single Spanish soldier were left in the whole of South America, he would persist in carrying on the contest against Chile to the last drop of blood. When he finished that mad tirade, his wife's long white hand was raised, and she just caressed his knee with the tips of her fingers for a fraction of a second. For the rest of the officer's stay, which did not extend for more than half an hour after the banquet, that ferocious chieftain of a desperate partida overflowed with amiability and kindness. He had been hospitable before, but now it seemed as though he could not do enough for the comfort and safety of his visitors' journey back to their ship. Nothing, I have been told, could have presented a greater contrast to his late violence, or the habitual taciturn reserve of his manner. Like a man elated beyond measure by an unexpected happiness, he overflowed with goodwill, amiability, and attentions. He embraced the officers like brothers, almost with tears in his eyes. The released prisoners were presented each with a piece of gold. At the last moment, suddenly, he declared he could do no less than restore to the masters of the merchant vessels all their private property. This unexpected generosity caused some delay in the deeper tour of the party, and their first march was very short. Late in the evening, Gasparuz rode up with an escort to their campfires, bringing along with him a mule loaded with cases of wine. He had come, he said, to drink a stirrup cup with his English friends, whom he would never see again. He was mellow and joyous in his temper. He told stories of his own exploits, laughed like a boy, borrowed a guitar from the Englishman's chief muleteer, and sitting cross-legged on his superfine poncho spread before the glow of the embers, sang a Gasso love song in a tender voice. Then his head dropped on his breast, his hands fell to the ground. The guitar rolled off his knees, and a great hush fell over the camp after the love song of the implacable partisan who had made so many of our people weep for destroyed homes and for loves cut short. Before anybody could make a sound, he sprang up from the ground and called for his horse. "Adios, my friends!" he cried. "Go with God. I love you. And tell them well in Santiago that between Gasparuz, Colonel of the King of Spain, and the Republican Carrion Crows of Chile there is war to the last breath. War. 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 With a great yell of war. 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 Which his escort took up, they rode away, and the sound of hoofs and of voices died out in the distance between the slopes of the hills. The two young English officers were convinced that Ruz was mad. "How do you say that? Tell you say?" But the doctor, an observant Scotsman with much shrewdness and philosophy in his character, told me that it was a very curious case of possession. I met him many years afterwards, but he remembered the experience very well. He told me too, that in his opinion, that woman did not lead Gasparuz into the practice of sanguinary treachery by direct persuasion, but by the subtle way of awakening and keeping alive in his simple mind a burning sense of an irreparable wrong. Maybe, maybe. But I would say that she poured half of her vengeful soul into the strong clay of that man, as you may pour intoxication, madness, poison into an empty cup. If he wanted war, he got it in earnest when our victorious army began to return from Peru. Systematic operations were planned against this blot on the honor and prosperity of our hardly won independence. General Robles commanded, with his well-known ruthless severity. Savage reprisals were exercised on both sides, and no quarter was given in the field. Having won my promotion in the Peru campaign, I was a captain on the staff. Gasparuz found himself hard-pressed. At the same time, we heard by means of a fugitive priest who had been carried off from his village presbytery and galloped 80 miles into the hills to perform the christening ceremony, that a daughter was born to them. To celebrate the event, I suppose, Ruz executed one or two brilliant forays clear away at the rear of our forces and defeated the detachments sent out to cut off his retreat. General Robles nearly had a stroke of apoplexy from rage. He found another cause of insomnia than the bites of mosquitoes. But against this one, sinners, tumblers of raw brandy had no more effect than so much water. He took to railing and storming at me about my strong man. And from our impatience to end this inglorious campaign, I am afraid that all we young officers became reckless and apt to take undue risks on service. Nevertheless, slowly, inch by inch as it were, our columns were closing upon Gasparuz, though he had managed to raise all the Araucanian nation of wild Indians against us. Then a year or more later, our government became aware through its agents and spies that he had actually entered into alliance with Carreras, the so-called dictator of the so-called Republic of Mendoza, on the other side of the mountains. Whether Gasparuz had a deep political intention, or whether he wished only to secure a safe retreat for his wife and child, while he pursued remorselessly against us his war of surprises and massacres, I cannot tell. The alliance, however, was a fact. Defeated in his attempt to check our advance from the sea, he retreated with his usual swiftness, and preparing for another hard and hazardous tussle, began by sending his wife with the little girl across the Piquina range of mountains, on the frontier of Mendoza. Zai, now Carreras, under the guise of politics and liberalism, was a scoundrel of the deepest dye, and the unhappy state of Mendoza was the prey of thieves, robbers, traitors, and murderers, who formed his party. He was under a noble exterior a man without heart, pity, honor, or conscience. He aspired to nothing but tyranny, and though he would have made use of Gasparuz for his nefarious designs, yet he soon became aware that to propitiate the Chilean government would answer his purpose better. I blush to say that he made proposals to our government to deliver upon certain conditions the wife and child of the man who had trusted to his honor, and that this offer was accepted. While on her way to Mendoza over the Piquina Pass, she was betrayed by her escort of Carrera's men, and given up to the officer in command of a Chilean fort on the upland at the foot of the main Cordillera range. This atrocious transaction might have cost me dear, for as a matter of fact I was a prisoner in Gasparuz's camp when he received the news. I had been captured during a reconnaissance, my escort of a few troopers being speared by the Indians of his bodyguard. I was saved from the same fate because he recognized my features just in time. No doubt my friends thought I was dead, and I would not have given much for my life at any time. But the strong man treated me very well, because, he said, I had always believed in his innocence, and had tried to serve him when he was a victim of injustice. And now, apostrophe was his speech to me, you shall see that I always speak the truth. You are safe. Apostrophe, I did not think I was very safe when I was called up to go to him one night. He paced up and down like a wild beast, exclaiming, "Betrayed! Betrayed!" Apostrophe, he walked up to me clenching his fists. "I could cut your throat." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Will that give your wife back to you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, I said as quietly as I could. and the child. ... he yelled out, as if mad. He fell into a chair and laughed in a frightful, boisterous manner. Oh, no, you are safe. ... I assured him that his wife's life was safe too, but I did not say what I was convinced of, that he would never see her again. He wanted war to the death, and the war could only end with his death. He gave me a strange, inexplicable look, and sat muttering blankly, in their hands. In their hands. ... I kept as still as a mouse before a cat. Suddenly he jumped up. What am I doing here? ... he cried. And opening the door, he yelled out orders to saddle and mount. What is it? ... he stammered, coming up to me. The Paquina Fort. A fort of Palisades. Nothing. I would get her back, if she were hidden in the very heart of the mountain. ... he amazed me by adding, with an effort, I carried her off in my two arms, while the earth trembled. And the child at least is mine. She at least is mine. ... those were bizarre words, but I had no time for wonder. You shall go with me, ... he said, violently. I may want to parley, and any other messenger from Ruse, the outlaw, would have his throat cut. ... this was true enough. Between him and the rest of incensed mankind there could be no communication, according to the customs of honorable warfare. In less than half an hour we were in the saddle, flying wildly through the night. He had only an escort of 20 men at his quarters, but would not wait for more. He sent, however, messengers to Panelio, the Indian chief then ranging in the foothills, directing him to bring his warriors to the uplands, and meet him at the lake, called the Eye of Water, near whose shores the frontier fort of Paquina was built. We crossed the lowlands with that untired rapidity of movement which had made Gasparu's raids so famous. We followed the lower valleys up to their precipitous heads. The ride was not without its dangers. A cornice road on a perpendicular wall of basalt wound itself around a buttressing rock, and at last we emerged from the gloom of a deep gorge upon the upland of Paquina. It was a plain of green wiry grass and thin flowering bushes, but high above our heads patches of snow hung in the folds and crevices of the great walls of rock. The little lake was as round as a staring eye. The Garai son of the fort were just driving in their small herd of cattle when we appeared. Then the great wooden gates swung to, and that four-square enclosure of broad blackened stakes pointed at the top, and barely hiding the grass roofs of the huts inside seemed deserted, empty, without a single soul. But when summoned to surrender, by a man who at Gasparu's order rode fearlessly forward, those inside answered by a volley which rolled him, and his horse over. I heard Ruse by my side grind his teeth. It does not matter, ... he said. Now you go. Torn and faded as its rags were, the vestiges of my uniform were recognized, and I was allowed to approach within speaking distance. And then I had to wait, because a voice clamoring through a loophole with joy and astonishment would not allow me to place a word. It was the voice of Major Pagel, an old friend. He, like my other comrades, had thought me killed a long time ago. Put spurs to your horse, man. ... he yelled, in the greatest excitement. We will swing the gate open for you. ... I let the reins fall out of my hand, and shook my head. I am on my honor, ... I cried. To him. ... he shouted, with infinite disgust. He promises you your life. ... our life is our own. And do you, Santiera, advise us to surrender to that rastrero? ... no. ... I shouted. But he wants his wife and child, and he can cut you off from water. ... then she would be the first to suffer. You may tell him that. Look here, this is all nonsense. We shall dash out and capture you. ... you shall not catch me alive, ... I said, firmly. Imbecile. apostrophe apostrophe, for God's sake, apostrophe, I continued, hastily, do not open the gate. Apostrophe apostrophe, and I pointed at the multitude of Panelio's Indians who covered the shores of the lake. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.